Welcome to episode 173 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Last week we started a two-part series in which we're looking at some images that I made on a trip to the Inawashiro Lake on the last day of 2008, hoping to capture one or two more good images before I said goodbye to the year. I think I did that. We saw two of the images shot on this day in my 2008 best 10 that I selected and spoke about in episode 170. And we'll take a quick look at those again today, but from a different angle. And by that, I mean, not a photographical angle, but an artistic angle, a discussion angle. So let's jump right into it and see what I shot in the hour or so after breakfast and then before heading back to Tokyo before lunch. So we were played out of episode 172 last week with me all excited after my hour-long shoot in the blizzard at dawn. I was heading back in for breakfast, but wanted to remind you something that we did touch on the recording that I made that we listened to at the end of last week's show. We've also covered this in other podcasts about winter shooting as well, but. Basically, I just wanted to remind you that when you go back inside with really cold gear, condensation will form on the gear, and if it's cold through to the core, as mine would have undoubtedly been on that morning, the condensation can form on the inside, giving you all sorts of problems and even damaging your lenses and bodies. So to avoid this, you need to put your gear into your camera bag and zip it up and don't open it up indoors in the warm until the gear's had a chance to warm up pretty slowly. And depending on how cold it is, it can take a good hour or more before the risk of condensation subsides. You can also put your gear into plastic bags and tie it up, just tie the opening up with those metal with the plastic things around them, little bag ties or something. I forget what they're called. Probably never even knew what they were called. But anyway, those little twisty things that you can put around stuff, you can use that or just tie it up. But obviously, that's not going to be quite as airtight if you tie a loose knot. Whichever way you choose, try to sort of get it at least a little bit airtight. But I actually prefer just to stick everything into a bag. And that way, if I'm going into the warmer, it's in there. It's relatively protected, not totally airtight, but it will at least warm up slowly enough to stop the condensation from harming the gear or even forming on the gear. And I think part of this, even though it's not airtight, a lot of it is just because of the insulation. Most camera bags have those thick pads between the sections of the bag and stuff, and then the outside. So, generally, I think that insulation is going to be the biggest thing there. Plastic bags, though, will allow the equipment to warm up more quickly. If they are airtight, it'll stop the condensation, but they will warm up a little bit more quickly. So, if you need your equipment inside relatively soon after getting in there, then that might be something to explore. If you want to make backups of your images while you're inside as well, I suggest taking the memory cards out before you pack your gear away, as it will be tempting to go and sort of open the bag too early if your memory's still in the camera. Note though, if you do that, rather than just sort of putting it in your mouth or sticking it in, holding it in your hand or something, try and put it back into a memory case and put that case away. Because especially when you're cold, you're going to be fumbling a little bit. And if you sort of say stick it under your arm, you might forget it's there. And I've actually done that and dropped a memory case, a memory card case on a beach in Hokkaido. And so I ended up going back there with a torch and looking for it in the dark. So it wasn't really a good experience. I thought I'd lost all of my images. Luckily, I found the card case, but it was a bit of a scare for a while there. But try to put them away safely before you continue to do the rest of your preparation to go inside. Another thing to note is that if you're going to be heading back out into the cold within an hour or so before the equipment's had a chance to warm up, then, you know, it's probably just going to be, you know, you're just going to be back out in the cold before you know it. So it's probably not worth taking it in the first place. And so, you know, if you're in a relatively safe area, and by safe, you know, I mean like as in low crime area, then another thing to consider is just putting it in the trunk of your car, as it's going to be pretty cold in there too, especially if you haven't had the engine running, of course. I threw all my gear into the trunk of the car and left it out in the cold while I went in to have breakfast and checked out the hotel and stuff. But, you know, I knew as well that there were people inside the hotel that could see the car, you know, from certain angles. And Japan's a really... probably one of the most safest countries in the world when it comes to crime. There is obviously some crime, but although I'm paranoid in most situations, and you know, I rarely even leave stuff in my hotel room for very long. But you know, sometimes it's just worth a bit of risk, especially if you're fully insured. I mean, I always make sure that my gear is all insured. So just sort of leaving it in the trunk of your car is another option when it comes to sort of keeping it cold, so that you don't go through the hassle of warming it up and then going back outside again and then having to do it all again. So anyway, you know, when I came back out to my car, there was actually still snow all over the 600mm and 300mm lens that was just sort of laying there in the trunk of the car, and the body for that matter. It was still there. I think I've got an iPhone photo of this when I opened the trunk, but you know, still all really covered in snow. So it was obviously still well below freezing in the car. Anyway, let's get on to looking at some images. First, let's look at image number 2048. Although we haven't looked at any swan shots yet, I was here mostly interested in the shooting the swans that spend their winters here because it's warmer than Siberia. You know, they fly down from Siberia in the winter, and at most of the lakes where you find swans in Japan, you also will find a large colony of pintail ducks. And these are what we see here, sort of walking or waddling up the snow-covered beach there at the Inawashiro Lake. The ducks are pretty comical, you know. I think they sort of make this procession, waddling up the beach, and then what they do is they get up here and then they wait outside the cafeteria door. Well, I was standing in front of that at the time. It looks like a real sort of wilderness place, but it's actually in front of a hotel's cafeteria area. And I was there, and what happens is there's a lady inside the cafeteria that cuts bread into pieces, and they sell that for $2 a bag. And tourists buy the bread and come outside and give it to the ducks. And then, you know, when it's all gone, they fly back down to the water to have a drink and sort of wash out, you know, wash down the bread. Then they waddle back up again to the door and wait for the next tourist bearing bread to come out. I've got mixed feelings about feeding these birds, you know, especially with stuff like bread, which is really way, this is not going to be even close to what they would normally eat. But, you know, they've been conditioned to it and they look okay for it. So, you know, I guess it's fine. Us humans need that contact too, I believe. You know, my wife does. You know, she definitely enjoys this. This is part of the reason why she comes on this particular trip with me. She doesn't like the cold or the sort of sensation of slipping on the snow, and so it's she gets have to get over a few things to come out here with me. But when she's here, she can feed these ducks, and it makes it worth a while to be there. And, you know, I think that in general, humans do enjoy sort of, you know, getting around, you know, the bird, not just birds, but animals, and sort of, you know, you get a little bit back from that experience, I think. We'd spent the previous few days on this trip doing a little bit more touristy stuff, visiting a quaint village about an hour from here. And, that's why it's an hour on the wintry roads. It might be a little bit more. A little bit less, in good weather, but we'd sort of just been really having a relatively relaxing time, and so it was nice to have her along with me, although it did mean that I had to take a few more things into consideration, which we'll get to a little bit later. But I shot this image with the 70 to 200mm f2.8L lens, and I'd, uh, I'd got my camera set to ISO 200, giving me a shutter speed of 1/640th of a second at f5. I didn't select a smaller aperture because I wanted to maintain relatively shallow enough depth of field there so that we'd allow the back of the line of ducks and the waves to go out of focus slightly, adding that feeling of depth that we see there. I shot a number of images of the ducks pretty up close, a lot that I've uploaded as well. We're not going to look at them all today, but one thing I wanted to touch on, I've mentioned this before as well, but as a refresher, when you're sort of trying to get in close to animals, especially sort of, I don't want to say wild animals with these things, you can tell how used to humans they are, but you know, animals can definitely be skitty and they will scare and fly away. So when you're trying to get in relatively close to animals, it's always best to sort of, you know, as you get a little bit closer, shoot as much as you can as you walk it, as you go in. Try not to make any sudden movements and then sort of, you know, just gradually work your way towards them. And, you know, if you look at the shots, the few of the shots that I have posted, there'll be a link to list all of the images from the day and in the show notes, by the way. But if you, you know, as you do sort of getting closer, just stop and shoot and get what you can while you're a little bit further away. And they can often be, you know, pretty useful shots as well. And, you know, so get what you can as you close in. But then as you get closer and closer, you can sometimes get in so close that you can capture a pretty cute expression. And that's what I think I did in image number 2051. Here I got so close that the duck on the right of the image looked right up at me, and although a little sort of apprehensively, I got a nice shot of that awareness of my presence. Pretty much all of the other shots are of the ducks in a totally natural pose, totally or seemingly totally oblivious to our presence, so I thought this was a nice addition. This was shot still at ISO 200 but for 1/160th of a second, at f6.3. I was at the wide end of my 70-200 lens for this, shooting at 80mm. As you do get close though, the birds will, as I say, they'll often get skitty and they'll fly away, as they did a moment or two after this last shot. And I wanted to see if I could capture that though. And so, you know, when they'd come back, I started to see the patterns of them sort of waddling up the beach, settling down, and then flying back out towards the water. And so I set my camera up to capture the action, as we can see in image number 2054. I selected an aperture of f2.8, wide open for that lens, with a shutter speed of 1/640th of a second at ISO 100. And as I got close to the ducks again, they took flight as I'd now expected them to. And I snapped a few frames with the cameras focusing on the AI servo mode, hoping to latch onto something interesting. And I did this, you know, with this single bird here that we can see in the middle of the frame, looking pretty sharp. It's actually slightly soft due to the movement, but sharp enough to set it apart from the rest of the flock for a pretty dynamic image of these pintails taking flight. There were a couple of other trees on the snowy beach of the lake, and I'd basically sat myself down in the snow with a tripod, the tripod legs open to the second notch, partly so that I could put my legs between the tripods as I was sitting there, but mainly to give the tripod a wider base to help fortify it against the wind that was still buffering the beach at this time. I'd shot image number 2057 from this position. This is the image that I mentioned in the podcast about my 2008 Best 10. And, you know, it's similar to the one that I selected in the Best 10, but this one has three swans in the top of the frame, adding a little sort of additional element. And what I wanted to mention here, you know, I'm not going to go into details about the image because we looked at something very similar already. But I wanted to mention here this one today for two reasons. Firstly, because I really like it and I wanted to share it with you. And secondly, because I used a new feature in Photoshop CS4, which is the content-aware scaling. And I used that basically to bring the swans a little bit closer to the tree. In the original, they're, a little bit further away from the tree, higher up in the frame than this. There was a lot of sort of dead space that gave the impression that the, for some reason, the image just seemed very, very long or tall. And so, without any cropping or anything. And so I decided to basically, quick sort of rundown of how this works. But basically, you select the parts of the image that you don't want to be affected by the scaling. And in this case, it's obviously the tree and then the area at the top of the image with the swans. So I sort of, just did a rough outline around the bottom part of the image with the trees, sort of arcing over that, but then also including the whole of the bottom of the image and then the top part of the swans, leaving a small band between the two. And then just sort of made a, saved that selection. And then when you select the content aware scaling, you have an option there, a pull down, to select the saved selections. Seems a bit strange. So, you save your selection with a name that you can, that you know what it is, and then just go into the content aware scaling, select that selection in the pull down. And then when you resize the image by dragging it with that frame or the bounding box or whatever they call it around the image, only the space, in this instance, only the space between the tree and the swans gets compressed while maintaining the sort of slight gradation in that part of the sky, the driving snow and all of that. And so, what really happens there is you just sort of bring the things close together without really noticeably affecting the content of the area that you're compressing down. You can't see the snow so much on this web version, but basically, it's all sort of there intact still in the image. So I thought, it's a good sort of a new addition to CS4. Exciting to see in there. And I probably wouldn't have even used it a few years ago when I was a little bit more sort of strung up or hung up on changing images like that. But, these days I'm thinking I'm not really taking anything away. And I rarely add stuff to photos, but I will sort of these days just remove the odd sort of annoying element if necessary. And so, this as well, it's just a kind of an extension of that. And so I'm happy to do that, not really changing the content, rather just the layout. And that's all part of composition in some way. So, this shot was made at f/2.8 for 125th of a second at ISO 100. And so just a little sort of quick talk there about what I did with this image rather than going into detail of the shot again. I do want to take another look at the image that we looked at in my best 10 as well, though, and that's 2058. Again, as I've spoken about this shot recently, I won't go into detail. The conditions were the same as the last shot. And, I did want to mention, though, why I chose this over the swans shot for my best 10 of 2008. Many moons ago, I did an episode on adding an additional element of interest. And, that I still do that. It makes a lot of sense. Trying to sort of, a landscape. I think one of the images that I spoke about was a landscape shot of Mount Fuji with the lake in front. But then there was a guy on a boat that, I waited basically to sort of drift into the right spot. And that additional element really makes the image. This shot, though, I'm thinking that it's one of those where simplicity really does sort of win out, in my opinion. I've been doing a lot of test printing recently, and this has been one of the shots that I've been printing. And there is enough in the image to hold your interest, I think, without the swans. The main subject, of course, is the tree, and In a print, it's a pretty stunning piece of work. The dappled pattern on the bark adds a nice contrast, and there's there's actually a number of brown withered leaves that are left on the tree from last autumn, and they're basically you end up sort of picking these out visually as you scan the print. Then of course there's the white snowy beach. You look along that leads you through into the waves, and you you know, the snowy beach is really not an element as such. It's more like an anchor or a base for the image, stage setting, if you like. And then, you know, you go back to look at those waves and you've got an additional element there, a sub-element. You can see that we're at a lake, it's winter, there's snow, and then you can tell because of the waves that there's wind. And so it's all sort of giving you clues as to what we're looking at. And as you look even closer still, you can see the snow driving across from right, driving across the image from right to left. And it actually sort of all helps to bring that direction of the snow helps to bring us back towards the tree. And so, you know, basically here we're keeping the lone tree as the main subject with nothing to really fight for our attention that doesn't support that whole thing. And I do really like the version of with the swans too, so I'm not ruling that out at all. But when the swans are there, what tends to happen is it fights for our attention. And so it's not quite as aesthetic as this shot on the whole. Basically, you know, what I'm trying to say here is that this additional element thing, they can be kind of like the main subject and then these sub-elements that help to support. But then sometimes, you know, they can drag attention away too much from an already relatively powerful main subject. So, you know, it's worth thinking about. You don't want to put too many additional elements in an image or it can get cluttered. After I'd shot a number of frames of the tree, I was happy that I'd got what I wanted with the waves in the right place and the snow sort of adequately captured. And then what happened was a large group of swans flew in, not the ones that we see here in this image, but a relatively large group of swans flew in, and so I took the camera off the tripod and I handheld for a number of shots with the swans flying into towards their roost. I shot a few images that I also uploaded to my gallery as well. But then I saw, or maybe even just sensed, some warm light behind me. There was something that made me turn around and look at the quality of light there. And as I turned, there was a small break in the low cloud, revealing a patch of light and part of the distant bank of the Inawashiro Lake. And that is what we can see in image number 2061. This was also one of my favorites of 2008 that we looked at just a few weeks ago. So I'm not going to go into detail on the capture again. I did want to mention one thing, though, following a question from Ken Dixon in the photography forum at Martin Bailey Photography. Ken said, "I was surprised to see you include images taken only days before your best of collection. I normally allow my images to soak a bit before making that kind of decision." And this is a great point. And I actually mentioned this about another swan shot that I included in my 2007 best 10 that again had been shot in the last few days of the year. You know, I seem to have a habit of shooting swan shots at the very end of the year. But I, you know, basically, you know, I did mention it at that point. I didn't in the 2008 best of selection, but the same thing still goes. You know, I am a big believer in having a cooling off period after the excitement of the shoot to allow the emotional connection that we have with our images to subside a little. So, you know, we can basically then make more of an objective decision about our selection. Before I even upload images to the gallery, when possible, I'll allow 2 to 3 days minimum to, you know, sort of let the images sink in and sort of live with them a little bit. And I had a really nice, relaxing sort of shoot on last Sunday afternoon. And I'm currently living with 12 shots from this flowerscape shoot. And what I'm basically doing here is waiting for the memories of the shoot to die down a little, as I really did have a good time shooting them. And that will make me want to include more images into my final selection than I would do after a few days, you know. And even just after one day, I started to get rid of a few more. And it's definitely best to do this. You know, Ken is spot on. And I find that it does help to make sure that you post only your best work. And that's what you need to do. Just throwing up everything that you shoot is not a good idea. There was a teeny weeny bit of risk in the in the selection of these shots, and it's similar to the 2007 Swan shot, but you know, I was definitely conscious of that. But the things to note here are that, you know, although I shot these on the 31st of December, I didn't actually upload them until the 4th of January. And so I'd actually lived with the images for almost 5 days before I even uploaded them. And this time, you know, I'd also, in addition to that initial cooling off period, I went through and made my selection on the 6th of January. So I'd actually lived with these images for almost a week after the shoot. So they'd really sort of calmed down and become real to me. And even with that in mind, you know, I was conscious that there was a little bit of risk here. You know, a little bit of excitement left from the shoot in me. But, you know, almost a month has passed now and I'm still happy with the selection. So I think I'm good. Thanks for the great question, though, Ken. You know, I do 100% agree with you. This the cooling off thing is very important. Thanks for your continued participation in the forum as well, by the way. It's very much appreciated. So let's look at one last image before we close for today, and that's image number 2062. The last shot that we looked at was shot 28 seconds past 11:14 a.m., and that was just 20 seconds before this one. The brief break in the heavy snow clouds lasted literally just a few seconds, and by the time I'd shot the same six swans flying back towards their roost here, it was gone. You know, the time that it took these guys to fly across the sky in front of me was it. This is another one of those images that looks great in print, as you know, there's literally hordes of swans in this photo. You know, you can't make them out, or you can hardly make them out in the web version. But there are three swans on the lake in the foreground, directly below the six flying. Then, of course, there's the six flying. And I've counted 115 swans in that roost or breeding ground between the dark line, which is, you know, it's like a sandbank. And then there's the snow in the background there where the land starts and we've got the trees and that. So, you know, there's like 115 swans in there. And it's just, you know, I love delving into the details of shots like this, especially in a large print. I shot this, by the way, at f11 for 1/60th of a second with ISO 100. Relying on the IS of the 70-200 f2.8 lens a little bit here, shooting with a 150mm focal length. So, you know, that's about it for looking at the images. I did want to sort of go back a little bit to what I mentioned earlier. You know, basically I was here with my wife, and this was one of those relaxing breaks with some photography type trips. And so I really didn't want to push my luck by doing too much. I've had it, you know, at this point, I'd had a flurry of great images, and having spent a few hours in the snow, you know, we had that great dawn shoot, and then an hour or so after breakfast, and then it was like I say, it was coming up to you know, just before 11:30 a.m. And so I was feeling pretty happy with my harvest, and I was thinking at one point, you know, before I came back out and spent so much time out here after breakfast, of going to the falls that I'd shot in the winter at the beginning of January in 2008. But, you know, as the swans kept me out here on the beach for a little longer than I'd expected, I decided not to push my luck and sort of, you know, choose marital harmony over shots. And, you know, like I said, I'd got a good harvest. And so, you know, sort of being a little bit sort of political here, I thought I'll make sure that I keep my you know, keeping the good books. And I said, you know, do you want to start heading back? And she sort of jumped at it. She'd had a good time feeding the birds and sort of, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, it was this part, it was turning into my photography day, and I didn't really want that to happen. So we decided to do just that. And we jumped into the car just before lunch, and we started to head back. And it was really strange because we drove through a tunnel that takes you out of the area. And literally just a few miles down the road, as we came out of this tunnel, well, you know, we went into it feeling like we were, you know, close to the North Pole. It was totally snowed over. The blizzard was still blowing. And then when we came out of this tunnel, the sun was shining. There was no snow on the ground. And it felt pretty weird. It was like that old fog movie or something where, you know, you're going along a normal street and all of a sudden you're covered in a really thick fog. It was just like the reverse of that. So, you know, it just shows that how much the mountains can affect the weather. There's a lot of big mountains in the area, and, you know, they just sort of all capture the snow that comes across from the east side of Japan. And, you know, it was just like a totally different day. So we had a really nice, relaxing drive back on a relatively warm afternoon back to our apartment in Tokyo. And we arrived back just before the sunset. And, you know, so it turned out that it was one of the few trips where I'd not pushed my luck. My wife enjoyed the trip as well. Like I say, we'd spent a few days in some other quaint towns and things. And so it had been a good trip all around. And, you know, I'd gotten, like I say, at least what I think are a few great shots. So it was an excellent way to finish 2008 for the both of us. So I hope you enjoyed joining me at the Inawashiro Lake on the last day of 2008. I really enjoyed this shoot, you can probably tell. It was a great warm-up for the Hokkaido workshop as well. And, you know, that's now less than 3 weeks away. We're just sort of putting the final touches on the planning. And, you know, all of the participants have the details of the meeting point and everything. And it's really now just a case of sending a few things off ahead. Safe carting it all up there, and then just getting started, and I can't wait. If you're doing a composite image for the January assignment, remember that we have a very short schedule for this one. It's the first assignment that we've switched to a monthly schedule, and we switched into the month. So, you know, you have just a few more days left until the 31st of January, and that's coming up this Saturday, so you need to get your images uploaded to the composite assignment gallery at mbpgalleries.com by the end of this Saturday. I'll turn on the voting from the 1st of February for 2 weeks, and then we'll announce the winner in the following episode after that. And we'll also be kicking off a new assignment at the beginning of February, which will run in parallel with the voting for the January assignment, so stay tuned for that too. I haven't even started my composite. I've got a few ideas that I've been rolling around my head, but I'm starting to get a little bit worried here. I'm hoping that I have better luck making time for this over the next few days, and I hope that you have better luck making time for it as well if you intended to participate. But whether you did or not, you know, you just have a great week, whatever you're doing, and I'll catch you again next week. Bye-bye.
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com.